As the seventh Aliyah of Parshas Miketz begins, we find that Yosef is overcome by emotion, and the language of the Pasuk is Kinichmaru Rachamav. That language of Hirsch comments means to be stirred up with emotion. And he notes that the language is similar to what we use to mean a pagan priest, a komar, and he understands that to be connected because the job of such a priest is to stir up the emotions, as opposed to a kohen who comes from an intellectual perspective, and therefore that's related to the language to be kain with oneself, to be right with oneself, and to be meich in others, to actually prepare others. That comes from an intellectual perspective, as opposed to looking to stir up the emotions. So then he puts himself back together and he arranges for them to be served, and they're served separately from the Egyptians. And here we find commentaries understanding this in many different directions. As Rav Soloveitchik notes, this shows that the Mitzrayim never really integrated them, that there was still tremendous bias against the Jews despite what Yosef had done for them. We find that others understood this as reflecting positively on Yosef, as Rav Hirsch comments that we see that Yosef didn't eat with the Mitzrim, that even as a prince, he didn't deny his Jewish origins. Those Naim LaTorah comments that this is especially impressive because one would think that the mentality of Eved Ki Imloch, that as one who came from a lowly stature and has now risen, one would think that the idea would be he would try to find every opportunity to show that he's now made it, that he can now associate with the higher tier of society. So the fact that he still remains separate is actually quite impressive. We also find that here the language of Hayavrim, here used again, Rav Hirsch comments that even in this context you see the Jews have a special name, and this shows how they continue to be impressive and distinct. The Bereishis Rabbah tells us the fact that they drank with him is actually significant because at home they had stopped drinking because they felt such grief and such anguish over the absence of Yosef. So the fact that they start again here, it's not clear why, because they don't yet know that this is actually Yosef that they're dealing with. Some suggest perhaps that they feel that they had no choice because they would be in trouble if they didn't participate. As the Aliyah goes on, we find that after they leave, he sends his men after them because he has now planted his gvia, his goblet, in the bag of Binyamin, and he instructs the men to tell them that when you overtake them, you should say to them, Lama shilamtem ra tachas tova, why have you repaid good with bad? And that's a striking point, as the Alter of Slobodka commented, that you would think that he would accuse them of stealing from the king. That would be enough of an accusation. And to say, why did you repay good with bad? It's a lack of hakaras hatov. One would think that that's a lower offense. And you see that actually it's not the case, that ingratitude is considered more offensive. And this is perhaps along the mentality of what we sometimes understand as honor among thieves, that even those who would act immorally, who would engage in stealing and killing and other offenses, still have a mentality that there are certain codes of honor, and to be grateful to those who have been good to you and to repay kindness is a crucial value, and to show ingratitude, that's terrible, even if we could otherwise accept crimes such as stealing. And the Sefer Ma'ariv Yitzchak, he also suggests that this is representational of a theme that we find throughout, that he's dropping hints to them, trying to help them recognize the nature of what they did wrong with the Mechira. So here he's trying to say, I was only trying to help you in the beginning of Vayeshev when he was speaking bad about them. It was for their own good, and he was trying to help them fulfill their potential. So why did you pay back my kindness with evil? Why did you sell me into slavery? Here I was only trying to be helpful. So the brothers who believe they're innocent, they respond that whoever has this cup should be put to death, and the rest of them, they are willing to be slaves. And the response they get is that you're right, that that should be how it goes, but instead it'll be that whoever is found with the cup, he will be treated as a eved, and the rest of you will be able to go free. And Rashi comments that, yes, you're right, that me'ikra hadin, letter of the law, that should be, you should all be held responsible for this act of theft as a group. And the Ramban questions this because that's not the letter of the law, that if one person steals as a part of a group, we don't hold them all liable. So what exactly does Rashi mean by saying that they are theoretically correct? Rav Soloveitchik suggests that maybe the point is that indeed that is how it used to be, and Yosef is conveying here his moral superiority, that he's not going to hold them to that standard. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a fascinating comment where he suggests that the point is that yes, Me'ikar Hadin, actually only the one who steals himself is liable, but he's making a moral point here that if there is a culture that tolerates wrongdoing, so then morally, all of the people who allow that to happen are responsible. And if there was an attitude that says that anyone who steals is going to be looked down upon and is going to feel their disapproval, so then it wouldn't have happened. So he's conveying to them that there is a level of responsibility here that all of you should feel, but nonetheless, I'm only going to actually punish one of you. And perhaps also, there is again here a theme here that he's trying to convey to them that this is not just about this episode, but this is about everything that's happened to me and how I am the victim, not only of direct actions, but of a culture that has been created through your attitudes. And the Ma'aris Yitzchak also understands that here to be the case as well, that this is one more example of him trying to drop hints that they should feel guilty and recognize what they did to him. And he understands that in a different sense here, because he notes that when somebody is mistreating you, that's bad enough. But when he does that and also says, I'm actually doing you a favor because I could have done worse to you, so that is even more galling. That's even more offensive. And that's actually also what the brothers did to Yosef, because they said that they should have killed him. And the idea that they only sold him was presented as if that was some kind of a chesed, as if they're doing him a favor. So he's now throwing that back at them and saying, here, I am mistreating you and I could have even done worse. I could have held you all responsible. This is one more attempt to try to trigger within them a recognition of just how badly they mistreated him. In Pasuk Yud Beis here, there's something interesting. The language is Vayechapes Bagadol Hechel Uvakatan Kila. So he searched, beginning with the oldest and ending with the youngest, and Vayimotze Hagavia Bamtaches Binyamin. And the goblet was found in Binyamin's bag. So the Gemara in Maseches Pesachim has a whole discussion. How do we know that searching for chametz should be done with a candle? And there's a whole chain of linking words which connects to the concepts of finding and candle involving this pasuk as well. And the Maharsha questions that this is a unexpected choice, because this is not the first time you find Vayimatze. We find it earlier in Bereishis also, when it comes to the Trafim. Why should this be the pasuk that we look to in order to derive Vayimatze and how it's done? It's been quoted in the name of Rav Pinchas Hirschsprung. I don't know whether he meant this seriously or not, but it's an interesting point that perhaps Bedikas Chametz can look to here as a model, because at least the way we practice it nowadays, so we plant chametz in advance and use that as part of the process. So if we're trying to understand the nature of a search where we're looking for something that we already know is there, so then we can look to this pasuk, because that's indeed what was going on. There was such a search looking for something that they already knew was there to be found. In Pasuk Tezvav, with this confrontation with Yosef, so there is a strange reference here, with a similar reference earlier in the Aliyah, where Yosef asks them, why is it that you're doing this? And don't you know that I use this cup for nechush, for divination, which is a strange thing to say. And in the earlier context as well, it's a little bit difficult to understand. And the Oznayim Torah suggests that perhaps he's once again trying to dig at them. And it's a reference to the fact that when they threw Yosef into the pit, which we know was such a dangerous pit that had snakes and scorpions in it, and the question could be raised, how did you think I was going to survive in that pit? So maybe you thought that I had some kind of magical process, I had some kind of divination that I was able to do that kept me alive. Maybe that was what was going on. So is that what you think I do now? So maybe that's the understanding. And how could you take away my tools? And it's really a type of sarcastic statement and digging at them and once again trying to provoke regret for what they did. And perhaps all of these hints are getting in, because we find that indeed they are quite distraught. And the next pasuk tells us, "Vayomer Yehuda, manomer la'adoni, manedaber, humanet stadok, ha'elohim matzah es avon avadecha, hinenu avadim la'adoni, gam anachnu, gam asher nimtza hagavia biado." So these phrases we're familiar with, manomer, manedaber, manet stadok. Rav Hirsch notes that this covers all forms of speech, that which affects the heart, that which you would try to defend, to justify. Essentially, they're saying there's nothing we can say. They realize that they are in bad shape. And this idea of saying that God has uncovered the crime, Rav Gifter has a comment here that this is to say that they show that they understand, that they recognize what they have done, not necessarily now, where there's a false accusation, but earlier, their transgression that has led to all of this. And Rav Gifter also comments, in the name of Rabbeinu Bachya, that the feeling that they have now, that they're going to undergo a punishment, is enough to bring about a kapara. And he brings this idea from other Rishonim as well, that when there is the perception that one is going to undergo a terrible onesh, even if that doesn't actually happen, but nonetheless, that emotion and that fear is enough to bring about the kapara that is normally associated with that punishment, and that is once again a part of the process that the brothers are going through.